Lanigan and Malone, WMJI, Magic 105.7. Morning, Dante.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
All right.
This is Dante Moore, who's written a book called The Reeducation of the Female, which is probably going to cause a few women out there to go, get that bastard off the air, but we'll just give him a chance to defend himself before we do throw him off the air. But the book is selling, and everything's going well for you right now, I assume, right?
Yes, it is.
How many, have you sold over 5 copies?
Yes, I have.
To women?
To women?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Women are eager to learn.
They are eager to learn.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right.
Women are eager. Okay, let's say women are eager to learn. What the hell do you have as a qualification to teach them?
Basically, just being a man.
Just being a man.
That's right. They don't get this kind of language and detail when it comes to issues concerning men.
Yeah.
They get the psychological babble that tries to relate to their emotions. I'm giving them bottom line, hardcore reality.
Right there. Okay. And from what I can find out about the book, the biggest thing to you is the size of the woman. You don't like heavy women. You don't like fat women at all.
That is important. It's not that I don't like them.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep them down to a healthy weight.
How much do you weigh?
I'm a large size dude. I'm not, you know.
Wait, so you're overweight?
Yes, but I'm handling my issues. The same thing that women should be doing.
Now, when you say you're handling your issues, how is that?
I'm eating healthy and trying to keep my size down to a healthy weight.
So, yeah.
Okay. So
you're overweight.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of us are. Yeah. I never said it was going to be easy to keep yourself down.
I would think if you have a book out there that says, though, the most important thing, I mean, you basically, you state it right out there. Here's a little secret, ladies. Men never really ask for anything they command, and believe me, what you won't do, 10 broads around the corner will.
That's right.
The fatter you get, the more you decrease your potential single man pool.
10 broads?
10 broads. And he gives us an example here, folks, as you're following in the book. When you go to a grocery store to shop, do you pick up the nastiest looking, most rotten, smelliest fruit or meat you can find? Oh, you don't? Why not? It's the same with men when they see the baby elephant-sized, out-of-shape women.
Now, you wrote this tongue-in-cheek, right? This is kind of like, this is a funny one of those joke books that people buy just to get a laugh.
No, it isn't. Yes, it has some, it has some funny points in there. Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
But it's some serious issues that need to be, taken seriously when it comes to relationships.
Well,
now,
we agree.
You talk about, one of the things you talk about on the serious side that they gave me some credit for, where you have a chapter about STDs and advice like that, which is good, about prevention and getting tested and things like that.
Yeah.
But it also said the ugly part of the book, or how can anyone re-educate a female or any person without knowing how to speak to them in the correct tone, and they said they don't like your tone.
Exactly. That's what a lot of issues that I get with the tone. But it really doesn't matter, because when you come out here to the real world, it's much more harsh.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you the behind-the-scenes locker room lingo, barbershop talk that you wouldn't normally hear.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't take it, then that's on you.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when you were your testosterone self, before you came up with, what's her name, Kaniqua? Before you ended up with somebody, and you were out there spreading the seed, you were having a good time. Did you always wear a condom?
Oh, definitely.
You did?
Most of the time, yes.
Okay.
Now, you said most of the time.
He went from definitely always to most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you have to, you know, wear a condom when you're out here, you know, in this day and age, you know. So, I mean, that is just something that goes along with life. You just got to...
There's a lot of the guys out there don't do that. You know that, matter of fact, Dante. There's a lot of guys who are out there, and they're just out to get their pleasure, and they don't really care about what's happening.
Right, and that's what I detail in the book.
That's good.
I want them to understand that look, no matter what they say, what they try to play you with, you know what I mean, you need to protect yourself and your future.
Okay. The cover of the book, now you're an African-American, right?
Yes, I am.
And the cover of the book has two African-American women sitting at desks,
mm-hmm.
and you hovering over them as if you're going to tell them what to do.
Well, that's just another, model or whatever. My photo was on the back of the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to ask you about something here. We're talking to Dante Moore.
Uh-huh.
And it says here you inadvertently almost stole $15 from a woman once. I'm trying to... Now, explain, because to me it looks... Well, you explain what happened here, Dante.
Okay, basically, you know how people write things in their own form.
Okay.
You know. But what I told the Washington Post on that is basically when you're going out to a restaurant or something like that, something that was something very cheap. You know, so we went out. She handed me some money while I'm looking at the menu.
Okay.
After she hands me the money, I don't even pay attention to it because
why'd she hand you money? I don't get that.
I guess she handed me money to pay her portion.
Okay.
I don't even care what she handed me because I was paying for it anyway.
Okay.
My money was already out.
Okay.
So after I paid for it, and then we started to go, you know, more into the date or whatever, she was worried about that I took her change from the $20 that she handed me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what are you talking about? If you gave me a $5, so why would you give me a $20 for a $3 drink? You know what I mean? Or something like that. I had already paid for it. So it seemed like to me that she was trying to say I stole her money.
Sounds like it to me.
Exactly. Which was crazy. So if we starting out like
that. No, it sounds like you were stealing her money to me.
No.
You were.
No. If we're starting out like that in a relationship, I don't need anything like that. So
First off, you just hand the money back, Dante. You go, I'm sorry, I'm taking care of this. I don't want your money.
Oh, I didn't even look at it. I was too busy paying attention to the menu.
So what did you think she had passed over to you?
Like a $5 or something.
But so you thought she had given you some money, though, right?
Right.
So why would you not say here? Even if you thought it was a dollar, why would you say here? Take
here,
this.
I'm
paying for it.
Does it matter what it was?
That's my point. It doesn't matter.
Right.
How come you didn't just
hand it back?
Give it back to her and say, hey, I'm paying for this.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the amount of money it was, what she was handing me or whatever. What matters to me is after what she said.
You're dodging this question real good. Let me ask you one more time. You're saying that you didn't pay attention because you were paying for it, right?
Right.
So regardless of what amount you thought it was, when she gave you anything at all, how come you didn't give it back? Say, no, I'm going to be paying for this. I don't need your money.
Exactly. I told you I was distracted by the menu.
Okay. So there was a menu. Excuse me. There was a time you had to see the money.
I saw the money when I was putting it in my pocket.
Okay, that's when you give it back.
No matter how much it is, we're
spending too much time on this, but we're not getting. One of the things you say, because this book came out, women have been throwing themselves at you.
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't?
But they have been telling me.
It says right here, if we're to believe this author, women have been throwing themselves at him since the book's release. Those dudes that think they're women just come out to get a book signed are probably in for a rude awakening, you confided.
Uh-huh.
As I'm hugging them, they're whispering right in my ear, so I'm loving it. That's not true?
That's true.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
That's what I just said. Women are throwing themselves at you because of this book.
Well, basically, the
sticking
word,
money in your pockets like the Burger King prince or king. Is that happening?
No, it's not that easy.
All right.
It's not that simple.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but things do go on behind the scenes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah?
It does. Yes, it does.
Wait a minute. Are you cheating on her now?
Who, me? No, yeah. I'm very faithful.
You are, you're monogamous.
Yes, monogamous.
Even though you got a little mixed up, well, anyway,
okay.
I don't want to pick on too bad here.
No.
All right.
Now, you've never been married.
No, I haven't.
You got a kid, right? 11-year-old kid.
Yes, I do.
With you? With her?
Oh, no, not with her from her previous relationship.
No, but I mean, the child is with his mother or with you?
Joint.
Between?
Yes.
So you're both taking care of it?
Yes, of course.
Okay, that's good. You never know. I got to ask.
Oh, yeah.
The condom broke, apparently.
Condom didn't work that time, I guess?
No. That was a relationship issue. Yeah.
That was a relationship issue. So you've never really fallen in love, though, and got married?
No.
You think that's going to happen this time?
I'm not sure. I have to see how this goes.
Yeah.
You know, every relationship has its issues.
You've been going with her quite a while, man.
Yeah, we have our ups and downs, but we'll see how it works.
She didn't like this book when she first saw it. She thought it was full of crap, didn't she?
No, she actually didn't think it was full of crap, but she did get upset about some of the candor that I used in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But she said she, took a deep breath, calmed down, and started reading it again objectively, and she was able to get some insight on what happened, some things that happened in her past relationships, as well as things going on in her life currently.
Do you consider yourself a catch?
Oh, me? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I have the things that I talk about in the book.
A lot of ladies might say, we got a guy who's overweight, mm-hmm. has a kid, never been married,
and
he's not my quote-unquote ideal guy.
Right.
And he has a bad attitude about women. He's not my ideal guy. What are the qualities you have you think makes you such a catch?
Basically, the ones that I cover in the book, I'm fairly educated. You know, I take
fairly?
My time.
What the hell does that mean? I'm fairly educated?
Right. I mean, basically, I don't have a PhD.
But you went to college?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Graduated college?
No, I attended college.
Okay. Attended college,
yes,
okay.
Attended college.
All right.
You're a computer engineer?
Yes.
All right. That's good.
But, you know, educated, taking care of my child.
Are you cheap?
Am I cheap?
Yeah.
No, not when it comes to somebody that I care for, no.
Okay,
you know,
good.
And also, I do compromise and, you know, take my time with a female. I know how to treat them.
Now, you and Kaniqua, I forget, I don't want to pronounce it wrong.
Yeah, Kaniqua.
Okay, now, you two live together where? Like, in a house, an apartment? What do you got?
No, we don't live together.
Oh, okay. She's got her
own place, and you've got yours.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you live in a house, apartment, where you live?
I live in a condo, yes.
A condo, okay. And
do you spend more time at her house overnight, or does she spend more time at yours?
Basically, it's like half and half.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
All right.
You like the same things?
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like, you know, a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, has she changed the way that she acts after reading your book?
Yes. Definitely.
So she's been re-educated.
In a good way, right?
Yes.
Like
yeah.
How?
Some of the things.
She's not wearing frumpy clothes.
Right.
That was one of the first things.
You know, a lot of people tend to get comfortable.
You tell people that the only way the woman's going to be anything is to keep slim, wear sexy clothes, and just be there when you need her.
No, it's basically trying to please your mate.
Yeah.
Whoever you're with, why wouldn't you want to stay attractive when you're around them?
When they start wearing flannel, the relationship's over.
Flannel, that's it?
That means that they've just given up on
you.
Yeah, flannel's it.
I mean, pretty much.
It's cold out and it's winter.
If they don't even care, you know, what they look like
when
they
come around.
That's
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They just give up.
Does Kaniqua wear her hair the way you like it?
Well, I like more of a natural look, so yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
But that was before I met her, so.
You got your hair in a ponytail.
Yeah.
That's been out for 20 years. You got a ponytail? If I see a guy with a ponytail, I go, where did that dude come from?
I have locks, so I have to pull my hair back in a
ponytail.
You
have to pull it into a ponytail.
Right. Yeah.
So you're overweight with a ponytail.
Okay. Now, does she like your hair? Does she like the ponytail?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's more about the natural look, not really the style that it's in.
Okay,
yeah.
And is she happy with the way that you look? I mean, are you always trying to dress your best for her as well?
Yes, yes, yes.
And dress well. You do dress well, then.
Yes, I try to, yes.
Yeah. You're stylish. Yeah, you're stylish. That's good.
Thank you.
So you're saying at least it's a two-way street. Men should try to be this way for women as well.
Of course.
Then why do you call it the re-education of the female?
Because I'm re-educating women about what men think.
See, he already knows what he thinks.
He doesn't want to help other guys.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
Soldier on,
see,
my brother.
Eventually there'll be the re-education of Dante. There'll be another book that'll come out. It'll be written by some woman out there who guides the guys full of crap. But that's the way it works. Everybody's got an opinion, and that's why we've got a great country.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And your book sold a lot of copies, and you're making some money off this.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. You know, I've been getting a lot of interviews and everything, so it's been going really good. Hopefully people can, get some good information about it that will help them in their relationships currently or in the future.
I wonder, and it sounds to me like I'm interested in why, there's more women buying this book than men when you have your book signings.
Right. Yes, it is.
But they're trying to get, I applaud them, they see the picture on the cover and say, hey, I want to learn like these ladies are learning.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I think
absolutely.
They go and read it with their girlfriends and go, look at what a joke this guy is.
Either
that's
way, he's selling
they're
the book,
comical.
Which is all he cares about.
Got his book out there, and there's a lot of people reading books like this. Yours is just a little blunder, I guess. Maybe that's
I mean, you know, whatever they think.
You don't care.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care. So I state that in the book.
Yep,
you know, I'm trying to give you the information right now. If you can't get it, then that's on you. I mean,
you've got a title called You Knew He Was a Bum When You Met Him.
Yeah, I got a chapter in there, yeah.
Dante, I think you should come to... I mean, we have a test case for you sitting right here in the studio. Tracy needs
I've
a lot.
I've got a guy, and I'm in a successful relationship.
See the way she's interrupting me right now, Dante? She needs education. She needs to be re-educated. Could you come to Cleveland and re-educate Tracy for
and
us?
And I'm not overweight.
Here she comes.
I don't dress poorly.
No problem. Okay. Well, what are the issues are you having, number one?
She's kind of bossy, and again, she's...
kind of bossy?
And she...
Well, right there, you told me she's kind of bossy. Mm-hmm. That's going to turn men turn off real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're bossy to a man, that means most likely the dude is either effeminate or he doesn't have the quite self-esteem or masculinity to let you boss him around.
Men are just
born leaders. That's
you just called any guy who has a woman who's strong gay.
She talks. sports. Dante. She talks sports a lot too.
That's great.
That's a good one. Okay, I don't know. Men don't want that. Some do. Yeah. But anyway, she needs re-educating. So if you come and talk to her,
I think she's got flannel on today.
I do not.
No.
That looks like flannel.
That looks flannel to
it's
me.
It's not flannel.
That
it's a fleece jacket because it's freezing.
But she's got a teddy.
And a teddy underneath.
A fleece jacket with a black teddy under it. I mean, we're just
and it's not a teddy, it's a camisole.
Fine, okay. Okay, camisole teddy.
See, see how argumentative she is, Dante?
I see.
Dante, we can stay here forever. But listen, the book is out there, and it's called The Reeducation of the Female by the great Dante Moore.
That's right.
Good to talk to you, man.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. We're a few minutes behind, but that last interview was so important that we just ran over.
Yeah, it was
very enlightening. Anyway, it's 8:30 in Lanigan and Malone. What's next?
So we have the WMJI Cozy Small Business Spotlight. We have a guest in studio. You'll give us your name. You have one and a clue, and we have 1 minute to figure out what you do.
What's your name?
Good morning. My name is Sherry Haas.
Hi, Sherry.
Our business focuses on education, and our primary target market is families.
Mm-hmm.
And we speak the universal language.
You have a music school.
That was way too easy.
Yeah, universal language is music.
Yes.
You
had us completely stumped until that last clue. You have a music school.
Music store.
You teach people to play a music store.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, well, you should have said, no, you're wrong. It's not a music school.
We do that too, though.
Oh, you do that too.
Yes.
So you have a music store and...
So within the music store, it's a retail music store, and within the store, we teach lessons, and we have over 500 students a week.
What's the name of it?
It's Royalton Music Center. Beautiful downtown North Royalton.
Okay.
What do you teach?
Everything.
Everything? Piano, guitar?
Flute, clarinet, piano, guitar, drums, saxophone, violin. Everything.
You teach it all?
We have 43 teachers on staff.
Oh, yeah?
What do you play personally?
I tell everybody, trumpet poorly.
Okay.
You only play, but there's nothing more annoying than a poor trumpet player.
That's the reason I own the store.
I hire the
professionals.
Trumpets are awful if they're played badly. It's like, that's terrible.
So what's it called? Royalton
Music Center.
All right. Do you have a website?
Yes. It's www.royaltonmusic.com.
Okay.
What does Cozy do for you?
They do wonderful things, like I'm here this morning.
Okay.
And there's super networking opportunities, great savings on my health care, workman's comp. I think they're very, very good for the small business.
Great. Well, that sounds like a great deal to me.
With more than 17,000 member companies.
You really made it tough for her, Jimmy. You got it in the first second.
Well, she said universal language. Boom.
That was it.
Yeah,
the universal language was music.
Yes.
All right.
Cozy is most closely identified with providing quality, affordable health insurance benefits, but they do a lot more, so you need to check out their website. Go to cozy.org, C-O-S-E.org, or call Cozy at 216-592-2222 to find out about all the services they provide.
You call parents before the drum lessons and ask them if it's okay?
Oh, sure. And we sell earplugs.
And you sell earplugs.
Yeah.
What do you have more of? What group is it people want to learn to play more than anything else?
It's kind of a mixture. We do a lot of guitar, but we're very heavy in band and orchestra as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great stuff.
Our customers include the Cleveland Orchestra and the Boston Symphony.
Really?
Yes.
The Boston Symphony has people who didn't know how to play the instrument and you taught them?
No, we carry both elementary and high-level instruments.
Okay. Good for you. It's great to have you here this morning.
Thank you.
Good luck with it all, okay?
Thank you.
Gerald, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Nice to have you with us. Gerald Stern's a lawyer, a litigator, although you're a consultant now more than anything else, I believe, right?
That's correct.
Part of a very powerful Washington law firm, as a matter of fact. And he's written in the category of people that have been wronged badly before. The new one is called, this is a book called The Scotia Widows, Inside the Lawsuit Against Big Daddy Coal. Big Daddy's not the name of the coal company, I assume.
No, but it's what we would call the control that coal has in Appalachia. It's the Big Daddy.
Yeah. And Big Daddy's a negative in a way, isn't it?
In this case, it is.
I guess even from theater, Big Daddy was always kind of a bad guy.
Well, in eastern Kentucky, Big Daddy is the power.
Yeah. This goes back to 76, the story of the Scotia Widows, which is the name of the book. Back in 1976, there was a mine explosion, I believe, right?
It was.
And
well, we got 15 miners were killed.
Dead. Gone.
Yeah, 15 were killed. They then went in to figure out what happened, and the mine blew up again, and another 11 died.
Okay. Wow.
But it's even though it happened in 76, it created the 1977 Safety Act for the coal mining industry. And again, we just had the very same kind of accidents again last year and the year before. In
right.
fact,
yeah, we all saw that.
Yeah, I remember watching that. That I forget which one, what city it was in, but
there
I remember watching.
There was two
watching.
Right in a row. That,
yeah.
That
there was one in Utah a year ago, August, and then there was one year before that in Kentucky.
Okay, that's
Kentucky
the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Too. So there, actually, I mean, there were 16 or there were a lot of people killed. But this story is not about the men that were killed. This is about the women that were left behind and what happened to them. And it was fascinating because even their neighbors seemed to turn against them. When you're in an area that is dominated by coal as much as this, and you come after the people that are in charge of the coal, this can affect the entire community. So those people then become the enemies to the community.
That's right. They got gossiped about. When we talk about Big Daddy, they were also taking on their own fathers, who in the Appalachian world said, you know, this is our environment. This
right.
is our hirer. This is our employer. Don't sue Big Daddy Coal. They're taking on even some of their own brothers who were working still at the coal mine that blew up.
You got to understand a little bit how they think, because this is our livelihood, and I know your husband's dead, I know your life is destroyed, but if you do that to us, you may take away our lives too.
That's correct. That's exactly the fear that the others had. But these were young women. It's really a story of young women coming together in Appalachia and empowering themselves to take on the powers that be.
I would wonder, Gerald, now, and we can talk about the way it went down, of those widows, how many of them left that community? How many moved away?
Well, at the time, none did. They all stayed. The fight took about 4 years, and they faced a lot of problems. One woman had her house ransacked by people looking to see if they had any money there. They were gossiped about, things like that. And since then, since, of course, their victory over the coal company, some of them have moved away.
Yeah.
Some of them are still there.
The first trial, the judge had an undisclosed interest in coal companies himself, right?
Well, he didn't tell us that he was ruling on issues that were very relevant to himself. He had coal mining going on in his own land.
And see, that's not right. That's not the American way.
And the guy that was on defense for the coal miners was a former governor who was a coal miner, basically, in his own way.
Well, he was a former governor, very, very popular in eastern Kentucky, very effective. In fact, the federal judge we were before kept calling our opponent Judge Combs, because he'd also been a former judge.
Okay.
So I was up against the real judge in the court and the opponent who was also a judge.
Now, you were the lawyer in this.
I was.
And the lawyer against you was very much pro-coal. Were you hated defending these women? Was it a reaction against you, too?
Well, I was the outsider.
I know.
But I didn't feel hated. I felt ignored.
Okay.
It's like I was going into a strange land, and I didn't understand their customs, and they just sort of ignored me.
This is America, a strange land and their customs?
It's Eastern Kentucky has its own way. In fact,
yeah.
In one of our motions, which we lost, the magistrate said to us, "That dog won't hunt."
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's a term you've heard before, I'm sure.
Well, it wasn't a legal ruling I'd ever heard.
Did the ladies, were they strong throughout, or were there times when they came to you and said, "Hey, we have to give up here"?
It was quite amazing how strong they became. Stronger. They leaned on each other. They would call up each other in the night and cry to each other about their, you know, the problems they were having, and they strengthened me. I mean, I was quite amazed by how once you take on a big interest like that and you stay together, you become a new cohesive unit.
Yeah.
And you can do things that individuals can't do by themselves.
Did you find these women fascinating?
I love the women and still do, but we still stay in touch.
You had a judge who actually suppressed evidence that was important to the outcome of that trial.
The coal mine explosion was investigated by the government, as all such disasters are, and they issue a report to warn other coal companies about what went wrong. And so they issued a report here, and the judge, who had these secret coal holdings, suppressed the report so I couldn't even use it. It was really a disaster for us when that report got suppressed.
In discovery, you should have had that evidence, should you not?
It would have been my major witness at the trial. It would have been the government expert explaining why this mine blew up.
How did you find this stuff all out later? Certainly during the trial, it wasn't there.
Well, when I got after the trial, I took an appeal. The judge threw us out at the end of our presentation to the jury. We took an appeal, and during the time we were on appeal, a lawyer who had seen how this judge had treated the women and me in this little town in eastern Kentucky called me up anonymously from a payphone to tell me that the judge had these coal holdings. And when we found that out, we let that information go to the newspapers. They wrote a story about it. When we won our appeal and went back before this judge, we got him to remove himself from the case.
The name of the book is The Scotia Widows, and that's S-C-O-T-I-A. We'll have this on our website, of course, by Gerald M. Stern. Do you feel that this case did anything long-term of importance as far as making them change and make the coal mines more safe, or do you think they went back to their old ways?
Well, we know that coal mining continues to cause the deaths, so I cannot say that we changed the ways of the world, but the important thing is, I think, is that it taught people that they can stick together in eastern Kentucky and take on these interests. And I think the long-term lesson that I try to get across is that safety really is cheaper in the long run for these companies.
Must have been an interesting feeling. I can't help but think about that call you got that anonymously on a payphone got you on the phone and said, I have some information for you that I think you can use, and gave you the information about this judge. That must have been a chilling moment.
It was amazing. And nobody had ever heard about this. None of us. Nobody knew this.
Yeah.
See, in the movies where that happens, before he can get to you, of course, they kill him.
You're right.
Yeah.
But what?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a movie. That's right out of a movie script that you go, well, that's a good script, but it's never going to happen that way. But honestly, it did. Did you ever find the guy that called you anonymously?
I actually found out who it was, yes.
You ever talk to him?
Never again.
Never again.
Hmm.
Okay, interesting.
Is he still alive?
Oh, God. It's great to talk to you this morning, sir. It really is. I'm glad things came out well for those ladies. And it's a difficult industry. There's no doubt this is a very dangerous job, and you know that going in. And families do it through generations after generation, keep going back into the mine to get the coal. Amazing.
Well, they need the money.
They do indeed. All right. Thank you for talking to us today. You have a great day. The book is The Scotia Trial. Am I right? The Scotia Trials? Yeah. The Scotia Widows, I'm sorry, that is out there. You also had a very successful one before that that dealt similar with problems like this, which was the Buffalo Creek disaster. It's good to talk to you this morning. Have a great day in Washington.
Thank you, John and Jim.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. We'll talk to Liz Weston from, MSNBC?
Mm-hmm.
About money and things that are always on sale. Kind of an interesting column she came up with. She's always fun to talk to. And then we'll get into Monday morning and some of the moans that are there, then I guess you have personal moans.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't have any moans myself.
I mean station moans. And then the ones from the paper. All right. 4 minutes away from 9 o'clock right now with Lanigan and Malone.
This happened in New Zealand. Lizzie B. Cinema, they evicted four women, three of them grandmothers, because they would not allow staff to search their handbags for snacks or drinks they may have brought in. The grandmothers were outraged
and
how
too.
Offended they were that they wanted to go through their purse. Now, the website for the cinema has on there one condition for entry is you must understand the cinema staff have the right to request that any bag or personal article be submitted for inspection. Well, so we don't care. It doesn't make sense to go through our purses to see if we... And I don't know if they had something in there or not, but they... didn't want them going through their purse. I can understand that.
I can't
too. Going through my purse.
Now, if the purse is the size of a football field, or maybe a reason that you've got popcorn or drinks or whatever it is in there. But if you just got a regular purse with you, do they go through the guy's pockets?
They're going to pat you down
again. Yeah. And I think now women are free to say, you know what, I'm not going to go there then. I think he gave them their money back and then they left.
Well, the problem is with a movie theater. It's a movie theater, right?
Right.
You go to the movie theater close to where you are because of the convenience. And that makes it a problem.
Yeah. So it would not be what I would want to do.
It would be a personal invasion.
Yeah. But I guess if that's going to be his policy, then and
slow things down a lot too. It'd be like an airport.
Yeah. And they were already seated. It's not like they were as they were coming in. They were seated in the cinema awaiting the screening when an usher came by and said, "I'd like to search your handbags." Now I
What, did somebody spot them, like, pulling out bags of chips and popcorn and soda?
Unless there was a reason for that. You mean you just can't come up and demand to look? If there's nothing going on, I'd say go to hell. I paid on any of them.
Well, that's what they said, and then they said we're going to have to leave.
So you're going to drag old ladies out of a theater?
Well, you didn't drag them out. But
I wouldn't get up.
Yeah, they had to go, and that was that.
I wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
I'd stay right there.
He asked them to leave and refunded their tickets.
Fine. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't leave. I would say I'm sitting here, I'm going to watch the movie, and if you'd like to get police officers in here to drag my butt out, that's up to you. But until then, get away from me.